Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Geekscapers, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host, and we've got a special Geekscape mini this time around. We're sitting down with our friends Alberto Belli and Jim Mahoney to talk about their brand new movie, Gatlop, that's out on VOD this week. I kind of describe it as like an adult Jumanji. Four adult friends get together to do some drinking games and craziness ensues. You're not going to want to miss this one. It's a lot of fun, so I can't wait to tell you all about it. But first, I have to tell you all about our good sponsors over at NordVPN. If you're looking for a brand new VPN for speed, security, or just to watch British television, go to nordvpn.com/geekscape to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan and 1 month additionally for free. And it's also completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Just enter Geekscape upon checkout. All right, Geekscapists, let's get to the show. That wasn't recording at all. Oh, it was. Hey Geekscapists, I'm here with two good buddies of mine, Alberto Belli and Jim Mahoney. They have a brand new movie that comes out this week. It's called Gatlop. I think I pronounced it right.
You did? But
I would call it, and I've been selling this movie as Adult Jumanji. Have you heard that?
Oh, yeah.
One? Yeah, a bunch of four friends get together for an adult drinking game, board game, drinking involved, and they don't know what they're in store for. And the game starts to get a little bit away from them. Jim Mahoney, who's joining me here on Geekscape with the director Alberto Belli, Jim wrote it. So I have to start with you, Jim. You play Paul in the movie. You're also the writer. Where did this come from? And can you share that? How many details can you share before you get on some kind of watch list?
So I think this idea came from, I pitched this idea to Alberto in like early 2017. When we were both like itching to make something. I was actually just hanging out with a bunch of friends one night where we were all going to go out on the town, have beers as one does in Main Street, Santa Monica. And we met at a friend's place who was like, he's like, before we go out, do you guys want to play a game for shits and giggles before we head out? And before we knew it, like 4 hours had transpired and we were like having such a good time together. In fact, so much that my buddy's wife like stormed in. She's like, you guys were supposed to leave. This was supposed to be your night out. And we, as this was going on, my kind of warped brain was like, what if this was like a trick? Like, what if the game wanted us to get so wrapped up in our own, insanity that it locked us in? And what would happen if we had, find our way out? And I pitched this idea to Alberto. I was like, it's weird. And he was like, I like it. And so then I went off to write it. Because the thing, we both grew up with a lot of, 90s and 80s nostalgia. Like, Amblin was a big part of our upbringing, and he had a lot of that sentiment. He's like, I'm seeing it this way. What do you think? I was like, yes. So then I went off to start writing it, and Alberto was very helpful along the way. I would keep giving him, messy drafts, and he always had such very helpful words of wisdom to kind of guide the story along.
It makes me wonder, what that wife had planned to try and get y'all out of the house.
Probably just a quiet night. Probably just like a nice night with a movie.
Y'all are killing my vibe here. Y'all have to go. I'm sorry. Get out of here. Yeah. You're having too much fun drinking and having a board game. Alberto, when you talk about the Amblin influences and stuff like that, then you see that y'all were all set for production going into the pandemic. When the pandemic happens, how do you still try and design a shoot to keep that scope? Does that make sense? Because Amblin, when you think of Amblin, you think about that really magical scope. And this is a magical script. It's about a magical board game. But it's also takes place in a house. Like, what did you face pandemic wise, challenge wise, to maintain that tone and scope?
Right. I mean, that was a big part of it, was trying to design everything that happens in a house, but still feel kind of like cinematic and big. So we're trying to find a house that felt big enough for COVID protocols too, but big enough that it didn't feel like the protagonist, you know, Cliff had like this, like it's a millionaire who has like an amazing house, but like, so it had to be believable. But, you know, small enough that you felt like it was cramped. And there was also for COVID protocols, of course, we had to, you know, have the distance because it was late at the beginning of the pandemic. So we were like one of the few productions that were shooting. So we were learning along the way while we were shooting. And also the staging, a lot of it was, you know, most of it takes place in one area. So we tried to keep moving to different areas of like the dining room, and then they go outside when it's a flashback. So also trying to use every space in the house to make it feel bigger than it was.
And one thing I wanted to ask, as you're giving notes on these pieces of script, and Jim, I'm guessing this isn't the first thing you wrote, right?
Mm-mm. No. This was my first solo script, but I had written several movies before with a writing partner for years.
And as you're writing this, I know how these things do. They coalesce from scraps. So like you have ideas for dialogue, you have ideas for shots, maybe you have ideas for sequences. And as these little scraps are starting to coalesce, how much of the process was Alberto in that? You know, you're shooting them stuff like little updates, right? Like, or are you just going away, disappearing and dumping a draft on him?
I'm pretty much going away, disappearing and dumping a draft on him. But he had, it was great because he'd be like, I don't love this. And it was basically like, okay, so that's all gone. Let's try this, something else. He would have very helpful moments too. He's like, I'm trying to, one thing in particular, what became like Samantha's big moment. Like he was very much, there was something before that was more work related. He was like, I want to try to find something that really hits on an emotional core, that's more relatable, goes a little bit wider than just being a work related conflict. And so then we had what is the conflict with her mother. He was very helpful, like helping me kind of guide that. He didn't get too prescriptive. He was very helpful in that way. He's like, these are the feelings I'm trying to convey with the story. Like, what can we work out together? And then, yes, then I would disappear and then dump pages on his lap. And
and Alberto, how did you treat that moment? Because I think it's a pretty incredible turning point in the movie. I think it's where the stakes really start to come into each of the four characters in the movie have that quote unquote come to Jesus moment where the game becomes more about truth seeking for themselves and really changing them on the, you know, if they don't change over the course of this, they lose the game for the most part. Handling that. And obviously you have Umbrella Academy's Emmy Raver Lim and playing the character, like how much did you think I really have to keep my distance on this moment? Or I really have to put my impression on as a director and sell this moment. Does that make sense? Because one thing I always remember about those Amblin movies is you get the push in when they really want the audience to know you're supposed to be emoting with these characters. And I think that you did this moment in a bit more of a restrained fashion.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we were very lucky to have Emmy and we knew she was going to be able to pull it off, right? Like, I think we did like two takes. Like most of it, like it's like the one take is like the one that remained in the movie, and we just had to like change a little bit for the endings for pacing reasons. But like other than that, we knew she was gonna do it, so we just put literally the camera there, and then instead of like we did the opposite, instead of being the ambling push, we started like the opposite. We started on a close up, and then we kept getting wider and wider, so you feel like the friends are coming towards her. So we sat on her single, and as she opens up and she wants to reconnect with her friends, then we open the shot, and then now you see the four friends coming close to her. But it was a one take, you know? It's Emmy is magic. Yeah.
That's a smart decision because I always feel manipulated when that push happens, and then the music swells, and it's like you're pulling at it. And when it's earned, it's earned. But it's got to be a dangerous thing on set, saying, hey, when this puzzle piece comes together, is this all going to work? Am I going to have earned this push? You know, I think with that pull, you can also say, hey, she's feeling abandoned, and then she's falling into the safety net. The safety net comes into frame with her friends, and you have that stylistically. Was that all in the design? I mean, when you go into this thing with the COVID protocols, I'm guessing that you really have to, the room for improv kind of goes away, doesn't it, guys? Like, Jim, you're an actor. Was there a lot of room for improv on this stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, Alberto gave us a lot of freedom.
Forget the protocols.
Well, I mean, he would block it out to where we would work with what we had. And every actor, because Emmy and Sharonis and John are very, very smart. And it would just kind of, for the most part, it was, the script was like that large foundation. And then they would find ways to make it their own throughout. And then every once in a while, we'd have these like fun little, you know, happy mistakes and stuff that would come along the way. But Alberto, I remember what we've talked about from the beginning, Alberto did say, he's like, I'd like to have it be loose and free. Cause I think he would always say, like, if it doesn't feel right coming out of your mouth, it's not going to look right. So let's find a way to make it seem like your character, you and your character would say this.
And how easy was that, Alberto, to transition into that comfortable director mode where you're like, okay, this is a set. But this was a set in during the pandemic, like no other. And while adhering to strict protocol, you have to then transition to, all right, now it's make-believe fun and games time. How easy was that with the lingering kind of shadow of COVID?
It was not, it's actually like pretty easy, I would say, because like the four of them like got along for real. So like, you know, like the interesting thing about the protocols was also like they were hanging out, the four of them together, like all day, like in this room. And then so they actually were like in between takes, they were actually connecting. So by the time that we're coming out to actually shoot the scene, they already had that connection. It was very easy for them to improv, or they knew what was, you know, easy to tease to even like the character, but it's also them. You know, I think what I love about this process is like every actor became the character. Basically, I think we did a really good job. The casting did an amazing job casting these people who were very, you know, kind of, I'm not going to say the same people because obviously Jimmy's not the worst or whatever, but has like the spirit, you know, for me is the most important thing in casting, having that spirit. So instead of like trying to push them to become those characters, they brought something to the character and make it their own. So it's like when we're shooting and it was improvising, it all makes sense because nothing fell too out of the character where you were like, yeah, this is not working or whatever. So it was, they make my job easy. Yeah.
And Alberto did a smart thing at the top of this where he basically was like, we're going to start with the scene where they all reconnect first because it's going to be the weirdest and most uncomfortable, like naturally with the characters. And since you guys haven't worked together yet, because we didn't meet until that day because we all met on Zoom for the most part. And so it's like, he's like, this is going to be like, if we're ever going to make it kind of weird, it's now. And it worked out really well. And then, like he said, then they locked us into a room together for the rest of like 2 weeks, like camp. And we very much found a cohesive bond.
And Jim, as writer, you're also playing Paul. Paul goes through, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything. Geekscapist is a fun movie. I think you're going to enjoy it. But Paul goes through a lot of the most, he goes a lot of through a lot of self-analysis. You're also with him very early on. And you know the screws have been put to him very early on. I think out of all the characters, you know that the screws have been put to Paul the earliest in the film. And so he's really on the rack for the entirety of it. And you can argue that the film culminates when he starts to have his self-realizations. How close is this character to you, Jim? Are you writing what you want to play, or are you writing what you have to express? What's the combination there?
I think everything is like a little bit lived, right? Like I've lived a little bit of the conflict of all four of these characters to then, like, I do believe in some sense of write what you know, but not entirely. So it's not absolutely me, but I've had flavors of this experience. I'm a big fan of Stephen King's writing. And I think what he did, I read his On Writing book, and then you read a lot of his like older stuff. And it's very clear that a lot of the characters and some of his more iconic stories, when you read about his biography, is like, oh, that's basically him growing up or whatever. He just basically took all the guardrails off that character or took like an emotion and turned it to 11. And it's like, this is a magical world. So let's see what happens if the worst of me or what was the worst thing to happen to me went even further. And so it's like a foundation of experience I've had or very close friends of mine have had. And then like, all right, for this story, let's turn the knob up. Let's make it real enough and hopefully relatable enough that people can understand who this guy is, where he's coming from, and why he has to go on this journey. So I guess to answer your question, a bit of both, I think.
Yeah.
But not, it's not a facsimile of me by any means.
But were you still able to punch through some realizations on your own?
Oh, yeah.
When you're at the end of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think a big part of this was... Say again?
Apologize. You make some phone calls after this and apologize to some people.
Oh, no, no, no. They're going to be fine.
Sorry. I interrupted you to say tell a stupid joke. So welcome to Geekscape. Yeah. It happens all the time. Yeah, no, what were you going to say? I'm sorry, Jim. What were you going to say about the self-realizations you got writing the script?
There was an element of, because I think there is a piece of me that at times, like I think growing up, and it took a while as I got older to realize, like, I put myself in this position. And I think a big theme in this movie is like owning up to your own shit, like taking responsibility to where you are. Sure, people can do bad things to you. There are bad actors out there that can make your life more difficult. But ultimately, you are a part of the choice that got you into the problem that you're in. Like, very rarely are you like absolutely without fault. And I think that that's Paul's biggest fault, is that he's never at fault.
Alberto, when you're looking at something like this, are you looking for kind of that whimsical? I mean, who did the score on this one? Because the Danny Elfman, Kenny like, would say again?
Kenny Wood is a name, yeah.
Like Kenny Wood, was that the note? Was to give us a little bit of like the flourishes of like a. Danny Elfman kind of like take us through a ride through the sky and let, you know, really early on, let the audience know that anything is possible and you are stuck kind of inside of a genie's lamp with this thing.
Yeah. I think that was a big part of the movie was like the tone. And I think, Kenny would like nail it. And that was it. Like, I think those, again, going back to those Amblin movies, like the score helps to make you believe in the world, right? So we wanted to do that, like, even from the opening title sequence, I think that's where you get, like, the sense of, like, oh, it's grounded, but, like, magical. And that was very important for Jim and I to make it, like, fun, but also relatable, which I think a lot of movies right now is that, like, they go just VFX throughout, and you're like, eh, I couldn't care less, right? Or, like, too indie or too dramatic, where you're like, eh, also, right? Like, so we wanted to hopefully go back to those movies, which is, like, it's just fun, and then at the same time you feel something, but like the whole point is just have a great time, you know, with this movie. That's what Kenny Wood did, and then put all that together in horror comedy, which is like, I think it's a hard thing to pull musically, because like it has to be, you know, scary but also engaging but also whimsical and all these things throughout, and move through one scene to the next very easily with that. Yeah.
And it's not just Kenny, but you also have like your art department, your, you know, DP, and you're putting a lot of loud colors in this movie. And was there a draw to have extremely loud compositions to match it? Or really the question is, I want to know is, how are you balancing the surreality of the situation with the reality of still having to have grounded, believable characters? Because like I've said in this conversation, each of the characters has to have sort of their quote unquote come to Jesus moment. And that has to be a very real moment. We talked about how it was handled earlier. How do you start kind of, I mean, the appeal is to, when you start thinking about the surreality of the moment, to, you know, and you have it in, there's a Jazzercise sequence, Geekscapist. It's a bit surreal. You should watch the movie. You know what I'm talking about. There you can kind of go balls to the walls and be like, hey, I'm going to go fun with style and we're going to be loud and the camera's going to be have a lot of expression to it. Where do you kind of pick your punches when you're balancing that? What's your approach on that one, Alberto? I think is my long-winded question.
Yeah, I think the approach was always, it was, you know, this takes place like, which is like, it's a Venice, you know, in Venice is like colorful and bright and sunny, and like you haven't seen that many, you know, take on that. How do you make that a horror? And then we try to do the opposite that it used to, you know, usually horror goes from very bright and then as it gets darker, then it gets less colorful. And ours was at the beginning is kind of, I would say, like more grounded. And as the game gets more in control of the situation, the DP like would put like brighter lights outside of the windows that were like super blue. And then the colors pop even more because it was becoming a presence. And then when the twist happens, everything becomes green, right? So it's even more colorful. So we tried to put a lot of like hints. For example, with the green color, if you see back the movie, there's a lot of like the green is supposed to be danger, and then the reds are challenges. So it's like every challenge has whatever element is on red, and then when it's referring to about the ex-wife, it's green. So by the end of the movie, you know, try not to spoil it, but yeah, that was kind of like the, you know, like the transition where right. we were like using color to tell the story, and then once we go back, we went back a little bit more muted to the reality of things. Yeah,
and these are educating your lens choices too. You're like, okay, something has to be super wide to really be able to push something.
Kind of, yeah. And then, yeah. like, what I don't know if it can read on camera, but like, Jim is really tall. He's 6'3", I think, Jim, right? Like, and Senores is like 6'5".
Six five.
And then, like, Emmy is really tall, like, so, but John is like a little short, I think. So it was like, we had like a huge disproportion of like the friends. So we had to use usually a wider lens when they were standing to be able to fit them all. And of course, because it was an indie, you don't get to do a lot of coverage. It was more about like, let's make sure we stage it in a wide shot that becomes a close-up, that becomes like, so we're always trying to tell all the emotional beats without keeping cut to the close-up, because we didn't have the time to shoot the close-up, you know. So it was trying to stage it the smartest way possible, so we didn't have to miss out on coverage when we're editing.
How many days did it take to shoot this one?
How many? Like, I think it was supposed to be 15, and we got a positive fall case the second day, right? It was the second day? Yeah.
Second day, false positive case. We shut down for a day and a half. We lost 2 days.
Wow.
Or we lost a day and a half because we were halfway.
But you had to keep that day. You had to keep that window, or you could extend it?
No. So we ended up shooting for 13 and a half days instead of the 15 that we had. So
that's terrible. That's insane. Yeah. I mean, you spend that day and a half, Alberto, scratching shots or rearranging schedule. Like, what do you do in that day?
Jim can tell you. Like, we had to scrub a bunch of scenes.
Were you ever tempted to just 8 pages?
Yeah, that in the middle of it, Alberto and I, we had a conversation because when we found out that we were able... So first of all, the false positive was me. Like, I tested positive for COVID on day two. And this is like, I was like, I destroyed the thing I worked on for 2 years. How is this? And I hadn't been doing anything anywhere for like a month. This was before there was a vaccine. And then I had to test. I tested negative 3 times in a row in 12 hours with 3 different tests. So it was a false positive. So luckily the movie kept going, but it definitely like made, it was like, this is serious. Like, we can't, nobody can screw around, but nobody was doing anything except for shooting and then going home. But we had to, when we found out that we were back on, Alberto called me and he's like, there's no way we're finishing all these pages in time. So we have to figure out, he's like, I calculate 8 pages. What can we do? And so I had to sit down and frantically look at the math of it all and figure out a way to shave 8 pages in a way that held the integrity of the story, kept all the things that we love, and we didn't lose anything, but to do it in a way where we wouldn't have to, like, it's the producer, James Harris, made a good point. He's like, you guys get to make a decision what you cut now, or you try to get it all, and then at the end of 15 days, you don't get to decide what it gets cut. So
that's a good point.
It's up to you.
And looking at the movie, it's a pretty tight hour 20 or so, hour and a half film. I hate to say a pandemic is a blessing in disguise, Jim, but was that sort of a blessing in disguise to be forced to tighten some of that story? I know it came at the inopportune time, but
I mean, everything that was written was, because originally when I wrote this, it was for Alberto and I to make ourselves, like, to basically self-fund this. So the idea was to make it as small scale as possible before we ended up selling it. And then when that happened, it was still, the idea was it was a small scale movie. So everything was really well contained. And it just became a matter of killing darlings, in the sense of, we have to decide what to get rid of, and how do we do that in a way that we don't get rid of the fun that we love, like all like the mystery and the fun and the joy of this movie, but we can do without. And it, I love the creative process. I also love like how we had to solve these problems in the moment. Like, it's something that's kind of fun, you know, retrofitting. It was stressful for sure, but it's always a good challenge, and you can always come up with a creative solution, I find, almost always. Like, obviously some things are insalvageable.
Alberto sent me an email saying you refused to cut any of your lines. Is that true?
100% true. I'm the funniest thing in it, so.
Alberto, this is going to sound freaking weird, but when Tatum, our publicist,
who we're going to bring on the show right now. Just kidding, Tatum. We're not bringing her on the show. I threatened with bringing her onto the show. I think I've done that several times. Tatum helps us here at Geekscape with bringing us people like Alberto and Jim to be on the show. So we love her. When Tatum actually solicited this one, Gatlop, I definitely wanted to do it, Alberto, because I knew about you from Instagram stalking, of all things. This is crazy, but I was on Instagram and I ran into the LETV network, which your wife runs. The Instagram for LETV. As a Latino, I was like, hey, what is this organization? Because you know about the Nalips, you know about the different LA TV and film organizations. Your wife runs one, and you and she have a series, LATinas.
Yes.
You know, that one seems cool, but talk about that, because I love the fact that you are making Latino content.
Yeah. So that's a show that my wife and I created. She wrote the pilot, and it's right now it's in development by HBO Max. And then we shot like the teaser probably like 3 weeks ago. So now we're hoping to, it's almost done editing, and then we're hopefully present it to them, and hopefully it goes to series. But and it's about, we wanted to do a series about celebrating immigrants, but in a set that we haven't seen. So all of the four girls are immigrants, but they're all very successful. And like kind of like we saying, right, like my wife and I is like, we thank God, you know, we don't struggle with immigration, all that stuff. But like, so we wanted to do a different kind of story. Like, those are important stories, but we wanted to tell a different story. So also, we don't keep the stereotype when people keep thinking that's a stereotype. So it's just four very successful women, and it's based kind of like on her experience here. And then they meet at a salsa club every night. And then that's where my wife met a lot of her friends here in LA. So a lot of the time is revolving on that. And then what everyone's do, the life every day of these four girls. So I'm excited.
Well, Alberto, we're going to have to bring you both back when that launches here on Geekscape to talk about it. But I really appreciate you and Jim being on the show. Gatlop is on VOD digital on June 16th, folks. If you're listening to this, watching this, it's going to be this week. So look for it. If you want the adult Jumanji, that's what I'm calling it. Adult Jumanji. That's what you look for on your services, VOD and digital. Anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
Oh man, just thank you so much for having us on. This is fun.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Come back anytime, folks. This is why we built it. Thank you. You all got something coming out? Come on, Geekscape, and talk about it. Thanks for being on the show, guys. I will see y'all next time. All right.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
All right, Geekscapists. That was our conversation with Alberto and Jim. I hope you enjoyed it. Gatlop is out this week on VOD. And as for Geekscape, we'll be back a little bit later this week to talk news and reviews. Especially that new Jurassic World movie. We'll be talking about that. And I want to remind you to leave a 5-star review on any podcatcher you use to listen to Geekscape. That really helps out our visibility. And of course, hit that share button and share Geekscape with all of your friends. And of course, I want to thank our sponsor, NordVPN. Go to nordvpn.com/geekscape to get that huge discount off your NordVPN plan, that free threat protection, and one additional month for free. It's completely risk-free with that Nord 30-day money-back guarantee, so you got nothing to lose. You know how it works. All right, folks, we'll see you next time.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.